Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 10th, 2015. This is episode 1151. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you monitor, control, and automate your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, SmartThings is offering the Tech Guy listener 10% off any home security or solution kits and free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/TWIT. Use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internets, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, you know, anything with a chip and a technology. This is the technology show, and I am the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. This is where, don't think of it as like, I think sometimes people go, oh, we'll call Leo and he'll have all the answers. Pretty obvious if you listen for a while. I don't have all the answers, but between us, I think we can help anybody do almost anything in technology. Between us, and I mean us, you, the audience, me, and our great chat room, our listeners. It's kind of more like a user group. You know what I mean? You go to a user group. Does anybody even remember user groups in the early days of computing? Because boy, in those days, the computer companies didn't really support you. They didn't help you. You were on your own. Oh, wait a minute. It hasn't changed, has it? It's as bad, if not worse. But I don't know. For some reason, the user groups have gone away. I think because people under, say, 40 feel like, well, we know how this stuff works. We don't need a user group. We can figure it out. User groups started in the days of, you know, build your own computer. That's fact where Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak first showed the Apple One computer was at the Homebrew Computer Club in Silicon Valley. It's where people would get meet vendors and get answers to questions and where they'd swap stuff and stories. Remember, if you ever went to a user group, the best part was the librarian in the back, the shareware librarian. In my day, the shareware librarian would sit in the back with like racks of disks. Originally, they were floppies, 5 1/4. And then, of course, progress. We got 3.5-inch disks, smaller ones. And you'd have racks of them. And you could, because we didn't really have the internet anymore, did we? Or anymore. We didn't have it back then. And so we would, you know, you'd have to borrow a floppy to copy shareware. You could download it, but nobody had any speed. It was probably, you know, there were bulletin boards and stuff. So the disks were a great way of distributing shareware. We got lots of user group users in the chat room. J5 says, I was the membership chairman of T-Bug, the Tampa Bay users group of Trash 80s, TRS-80s. T-Bug. Ah, those were the days, my friends. We thought they'd never end. Thank goodness they're over now. We've entered the new world. We're back from CES, which stands for nothing. They were great pains to tell everybody. It does not stand for the Consumer Electronics Show. Yes, we're the Consumer Electronics Association. Yes, we put on something called International CES each year, but it's not the Consumer Electronics Show. It's just International CES, whatever that is. But it is. It's the Consumer Electronics Show. And it's a show where all the vendors, the dealers, see, this is another question. Who are these people?
Oh, yeah, I have the... The Bite Shack in Tampa.
Are there dealers anymore? I guess they're online. Anyway, you would think by now this whole thing would be passe. There'd be no reason to have a computer trade show or consumer electronics trade. It's all the internet, right?
But no, apparently people just like to go to Vegas and have a tax-deductible excuse to have a good time, because 160,000 people all got the same cold this week. You know, it only takes one person. Bring his cold in and everybody gets it. All got the same cold this week at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It felt a little bit, you know, I should get, I didn't go. I sent people down there, so I didn't have to go. But I, you know, and some of them are listening right now. Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, we sent him down there. And he did some great reports from there. I get the feeling, though, when I looked at all the stuff that was going on at CES, it felt a little like Groundhog Day. Like, haven't we been here before? So much of it is a repeat every year. And then there's new stuff, and so much of that. So probably the 10% of everything you see is new. Of that, maybe 90% of that is just weird stuff that's never going to see the light of day. Because remember, people go to CES trying to find a market. They don't necessarily, they're not ready to make this stuff yet. Or there's concept stuff, like Mercedes showed, this is going to sell great. A car that's a living room with swivel chairs and no steering wheel or anything. You get in the car and it just drives down the road. I thought that would might be one of the big stories of CES this year, was self-driving cars. Problem is, they're still illegal in almost every state. I think they are illegal except for experimental uses in every state. And everybody, I mean, imagine the terror sitting in this Mercedes living room, hurtling down the highway at 60 miles an hour. There's no brake, no steering wheel, nothing. It's a monorail without the rail. It seems scary to me a little bit. A little bit scary. And Father Robert, you got the cold? I'm telling you, one person with a cold and all 160,000 people get it. What else? What else was there? There were a lot of wearables, of course, as you'd expect, because I guess it was last CES, last January, where the rumors were strong that Apple was going to do a watch of some kind. Of course, Google had already announced Glass. So remember, the tech industry, again, for the most part, 95% not innovation. You know, there's only a few really innovative people. The rest are just going, well, what's the next big thing? Oh, wearables. Oh, I'll make a watch. I can make a watch. Sure. So a lot of wearables. Nothing that knocked my socks off. Robots, lots. But we're in very much the early days of robots. There was a robot wingman that would sit at the bar with you. And it looked like one of those IMAX. Remember, they had the dome and then the screen? But the screen would rotate and the robot would check the action out. Look over there. I give her an 8. Like, I don't need a computer for that. There were robots. There's a home robot. In fact, I think they just launched a Kickstarter project, but they were at CES. It looks like a broomstick on wheels, just this spindly little stick with a base that rolls around, and on top of that, an iPad-like screen with a face on it. It can't really get you a drink because it's got no hands, so all it can do really is wander around and annoy you. You have a phone call. Don't follow me. Go away, robot. But you have a phone call. Go away, robot. What else? Well, drones are big. I'm still excited, most excited about it. Now, Father Robert is a drone fanatic. He's a drone man at playing with toys. He loves the drones, but I am most interested in the Parrot AR. They kind of created the drone industry. They were the first to make consumer drones that ran on your iPhone. I'm interested in their new Bebop, which will be $500. Amazon is, taking pre-orders. But $500 is not expensive. And it has a camera on it that's super wide angle and can do these amazing pictures. It's easy to steer. The camera, because it's super wide angle, can see everything below it, and then you pick what you want. We're still waiting for the FAA to decide what the legality of this, because drones have suddenly gone from 0 to 60 in just a year. They're everywhere. Everywhere. Crazy. And, of course, we're going to start having drone wars. We're going to have drones falling out of the sky. We're going to have all sorts. I imagine, especially if commercial entities like Amazon start using drones for delivery. They're already banned in the national parks because people were loving that. And the FAA has intimated that it's not legal to use them for commercial purposes, although they have, for the first time ever, given a couple of drone licenses to realtors, some realtors, I guess, and agriculture farmers. It's the drone wars. Scott Wilkinson will talk home theater. He's back from CES coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. I shouldn't do that right before the show. I'm watching robot fail videos. I was watching them this morning and I couldn't stop laughing at these robots falling over and trying to do simple everyday things. And I was thinking about it, you know, these robots. I mean, we're a long way off from robots that could do anything like science fiction movie robots. But I was thinking maybe the reason it's so funny is because it's kind of reassuring. It would not be so funny if these robots were just climbing up the stairs and giving you food and pouring your beers and squirting ketchup on your hot dog without any flaw. That might be a little scary. So I think that's probably why it's so funny to watch robots fail. It somehow feels like, oh, whew, we're not obsolete yet. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's my phone number. If you want to join the user group of the airwaves, you can also go to our website. We got a great, if I do say so myself, a great website. TechGuyLabs.com, and that's where all the questions and answers live for every show, hour by hour, day by day, question by question, every show, every question. Text, audio, video, and a place for you to comment if you have a thought or an addition. And it's always free, no sign up. We don't want your email address. Keep it. We just want to make a useful compendium of information and a link to the show, every station we're on, 200 stations now, every the phone number, the chat room, all that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. The Phone Ranger is here. Heather Hummann. We were watching the robot fail videos. It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice to watch them fail. I like that.
If you're having a bad day, watch the robot video. You'll know that you have job security.
Turns out it's hard to do that.
If your job is squirting ketchup, I guess.
Hey, don't knock it. That was my job in high school.
We all had that job.
Ketchup squirter at McDonald's. They have a thing. They have a machine, so you can't do it wrong.
Oh,
well, so you should give that to the robot. Heather, you've been lining up callers since the break of dawn, and we are here now to do the show. And who?
And boy, am I tired.
I bet. Who should I talk to first?
Well, you're kind of talking about innovation, and George in Houston's kind of saying, how come somebody hasn't invented a thing to do that thing?
Okay.
That I want
to
do?
I like the thing to do the thing. Let's see. Maybe we saw it at CES. Hi, George in Houston. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, actually, while I had me on hold, I decided to tune you in on my Roku box on the Twitch channel. And I'm curious, I see you shaved your hair. Why is that?
Because it's radio and no one knows. No, we had a... it's growing back, and not nearly fast enough, but it will grow back. Right now I have a cue ball, and I did it for charity.
Oh, yeah.
We did, on New Year's Eve, we've done this twice in a row, and we're going to keep doing it, I think, a 24-hour telethon on the podcast network, so it was internet only. And the reason it was 24 hours is we said Happy New Year starting in New Zealand at 3 a.m. New Year's Day, or New Year's Eve, and went all the way through 3 a.m. New Year's Day and Happy New Year in Samoa, and just all the way across the planet, which was really fun. We had lots of acts and stuff, but we did it to raise money, kind of like the Jerry Lewis telethon. Our charity was UNICEF. And I said, if we reach $50,000 or $40,000, I will shave my head. Well, we reached $75,000.
Wow.
Fortunately, one can only shave one's head once at a time. Anyway.
So that's why. That's very interesting. Oh, okay. I called to ask you. I just went high definition. Got a high definition set. Got high definition cable box from Comcast. I'm loving the thing. But there's one thing I'm disappointed on. I don't find any way of making high definition Blu-ray discs a machine that will do that.
They have them. They have recorders. The problem with it is that the Blu-ray blanks, you know, the discs you need to make them are like like $25. And this, I think this was, oh, maybe they've come down a little. I take it back. Let's see, they've come down. They actually now are closer to the CD media. For a long time, it was so expensive to burn Blu-rays that nobody really wanted to. And I think that was the movie industry's way of keeping people from pirating. But now I see that the Blu-ray discs are now closer to a couple of bucks each. So that makes it more viable. So you can get a Blu-ray recorder. You know, just as you could buy DVD recorders. I guess as time goes by, you know, technology catches up.
I think I've seen one Blu-ray recorder, but it's like over $1,000.
Right. I think the movie industry is very afraid of the idea of recording at Blu-rays because they want to avoid piracy. So they're perhaps not – they're probably putting a little bit of a kibosh on that. Let me look here. Blu-ray recorders. I'm looking at Best Buy, see if they have anything. Yeah, no, maybe not. Let's see Amazon. A lot of people can do this. You can do it on a computer. You could buy a Blu-ray burner just in the same way as you would buy a DVD burner. But then you need specialized software and so forth. So Blu-ray recorders on Amazon. You're right. They're around $1,000, aren't they? Yeah, I don't see anything cheaper, actually.
Well, maybe next year, I guess.
I wouldn't, because I don't think Blu-rays are long for this world, to be honest with you. We're at the end of the technology. You remember, you know, DVDs passed away when HD came along, because a DVD couldn't hold enough data for a high-def signal. And now we're heading quickly to the 4K, the quad HD, or UHD, as the movie and the TV industry call it, ultra-high-def. And, in fact, we saw quite a few ultra-high-def TVs at CES this year. Scott will talk about those a little bit. But there isn't, you know, we've got to make a new kind of Blu-ray, and they already have. Can hold a lot more data, and so that'll be out soon. And it's going to be very, I think it's going to be, and I'm curious what Scott will say about this. He's joining us in a few minutes. But I would guess it's going to be very much like the transition to HD, only faster. But remember the first time you saw an HD TV, it was like you needed glasses, and all of a sudden you put on glasses, and wow, that's crystal clear, that's crisp. But HD was demanding. It took a lot of data. Not a lot of people had HD TVs at first, and they were very expensive. In the 10 years ago, they were $10,000. And then the Blu-ray players came out, and everything kind of started. Blu-ray players are very, very expensive when they first came out. And then they started dropping. Now they're cheap as DVD players. The discs are as cheap as DVDs. The televisions are actually under $1,000 for excellent HD TVs now. So everything has come along. It took 10 years, though. I don't think it's going to take that long for 4K. I really don't. I think what's going to happen probably is before UHD really takes off, and the players are out there and the discs are out there and everything, the TVs are out there, we're going to see ways to compress it and stream it, because I don't think physical media has that much of a future. I don't think discs are ultimately going to be the way to go. Now, when I say this, the video files always say, well, there's no better quality than Blu-ray or whatever the UHD version of Blu-ray will be. That's going to be the best. And that's true. But I think a lot of times good enough and convenient trumps best quality. And I think streaming solutions will be good enough, as they are now for a lot of people in HD, good enough and convenient. So I'm not sure I would invest at this point in any form of physical media. And I certainly wouldn't invest in HD unless you have a lot of videos and you want to burn them. But I just feel like 10 years from now, will there be Blu-ray players out there? Probably not. Let's ask Scott. He's coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They are cheaper, certainly on computer. He's still in Vegas. They can't get rid of him. Scott Wilkinson, actually, this is his last duty from ICES, the International CES. His last duty is calling us, and then he's going to head for home. How you feeling? You survived?
Oh, I survived, but man, my dogs are barking.
How many miles? I know you wear a pedometer.
I do. Over 28 miles.
Jeez Louise. Jeez.
Over 28 miles.
In how many days?
5 days.
That's a lot.
That's
a lot of walking. And the thing is, it's not like you're hiking. You're kind of strolling. The floors are hard. It's not fun.
No. And it's you're not necessarily strolling. I mean, I try to plan my route so that it's pretty efficient, but sometimes I had to hoof it.
We should mention that Scott did his traditional CES Home Theater Geeks show, went to all the TV booths, visited all the televisions, talked to the people about what they're up to, and you could see that at twit.tv/HTG for the full, you know, couple of hours of CES. So we're going to give you 6 minutes to summarize. First of all, was it worth it?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
No question about
it. Didn't feel like there were any breakthroughs. What were the breakthroughs this year?
You know, a lot of people are saying that, and I completely disagree. The biggest breakthrough for me was the announcement of the formation of an industry organization called the UHD Alliance. Now, up until now, UHD, or Ultra HD, was entirely about more pixels, right? Instead of HD, which is 2.2 million pixels on the screen, UHD is 8.8 pixels on the screen, so four times as many. But there are other factors of UHD that have not been addressed. They haven't been implemented in content or in TVs other than haphazardly. And those aspects are dynamic range, the difference between the blackest black and the whitest white, brightest white, and color gamut, which is the range of colors that a TV can display. And so the content up till now has still been graded or mastered with the same dynamic range and color gamut that we've had for 10 years and more in HD TV and even standard def TV. Well, now, the UHD Alliance is a group of studios and TV makers and content distributors who are saying, okay, we are now going to make content with greater dynamic range, higher dynamic range, greater color gamut, and pass that along. And the TVs that can show it will do so. And you can't believe how great that picture looks. If you just talk about pixels, number of pixels, you know, you've got to have a gigantic TV or you have to stand with your nose up to the screen in order to really see that, oh, yeah, 4K or Ultra HD looks, quote unquote, better, more resolute, higher detail. But if you look at a picture that has been graded for high dynamic range and wider color gamut, you can see that from any distance on any size screen. You can see it immediately, and you can say, wow, that looks amazing, and it does. So Samsung is leading the charge with this UHD Alliance, and they introduced a new line of TVs that they're calling SUHD. And interestingly, just like CES really doesn't mean anything anymore, that letter S doesn't mean anything either. And Samsung even said so.
Well, S is for Samsung. I mean, come on.
Well, it is for Samsung, but it's also for superb and stylish and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, right.
Well, I'm a big fan of 4K. In fact, I'm the one who's been saying for maybe 5 years, every time I see a 4K set at CES, this is where they should go, not 3D. Of course, it's funny, the 3D technology kind of jump-started 4K.
It kind of did.
Is this the long-awaited standard that we've talked so much about? Like, don't buy a TV until there's a standard. Yep. This is not just Samsung. Everybody's going to do it.
That's right.
Will the broadcasters do it and the new Blu-ray players do it?
Yes.
That's the key, right?
And the other interesting announcement that was made was we got finally the details of the Ultra HD Blu-ray standard, the physical disc standard, which I know, you know, you think physical discs aren't that important.
No, but there needs to be a UHD standard, I think, for Blu-ray.
There is. Yeah. There does. Yeah. Now there's a content standard, and now there's also a disc standard. And the disc standard will start to be licensed in mid-year, and we should see product by the end of the year. Panasonic showed a prototype player of 4K or UHD Ultra HD Blu-ray that was actually working. At first, we thought it was just an empty box. you know, that they said, look, this is what it's going to look like. And it's a box like any other. But yesterday I was at the Panasonic booth and it was actually playing a disc onto an Ultra HD.
Oh, I'd love to have seen that. I bet that looked good.
Beautiful.
So we're talking up to 60 frames a second now, right?
Yep, that's
high
correct.
Frame rate. We're talking high dynamic range. It's a larger color gamut.
Well, those are two different things. High dynamic range is the difference between black and white, the deepest black and the brightest white.
But more colors now.
And more colors, okay. Correct.
And we're seeing the new, this is the new HEVC encoding, is it? The H.265?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's what's going to be used on the new Ultra HD Blu-ray spec or standard.
Right.
We also have VP9, which is the codec, the compression algorithm used by Google and YouTube, but the Blu-ray spec is not going to use that.
It'll be better quality, I think, than VP9. And
yes.
And then finally, we're going to see players towards the end of the year, and TVs are out now? When are the TVs out?
TVs are out now. Samsung had their SUHD series that will accept this stuff.
Panasonic. Do we know what the pricing is going to be on any of this stuff?
No pricing was given on any of this stuff. Yeah. That rarely is.
And the disk capacity on these new Blu-rays is it looks like 66 gigs?
66 or 100.
Or 100 gigabytes.
Dual layer or 100 gigabytes triple layer.
Wow.
And the data transfer rate from the disk into the player is on the order of 100 megabits per second. Current Blu-ray is under 50.
Well, I'm totally all for this move. I mean, I think this is, if you know, you wanted a new TV, this will be the TV to get. But again, it's, you know, you're talking about probably this fall before there's content. But you could get the TV now, I guess.
You could.
Well, no, not now. You said now.
Well, no. Well, I mean, when these new TVs that we just saw at CES become available.
This SUHDs will be out.
SUHD, Panasonic will be out.
Yeah.
Sony will be out. Sharp will be out. There's a bunch of TV makers now that are making TVs that have something
now,
along these lines.
These also, these SHUD or not SHUD, SUD TVs
SUD.
Use this new quantum dot. Now, you were all excited last week about quantum dot. Now you've seen it. Yep. What do you think?
I think it's fantastic.
This is an LCD backlighting technology, right?
Correct. It's an LCD TV using a backlight, but instead instead of using a white LED or RGB LEDs, they use blue LEDs that fire through this material called quantum dot material, which creates a very pure red and a very pure green. And if you make an LED that's a very pure blue, and you can tune these quantum dots in the LEDs to make a very wide color gamut. And it works beautifully. I mean, I saw a ton. They were all over the show. Everybody was making quantum dot TVs.
And they're also all making now curved screens. We thought curved screens were jokey last year. It's like,
yes, it's true. It's true. But it's only the Koreans and the Chinese who get their panels from the Koreans.
Now, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because the Chinese have decided, I think, as the Koreans decided to dethrone the Japanese TV manufacturers, the Chinese have decided to do that. We're out of time. I'll have to save this for later. I'm curious how TCL and Hisense did. But that's Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek, twit.tv/HTG for more. Out of time.
But I did hear the music that time.
Yay. That's because you're not at home.
Well, I also have my timer on. I did have my timer last week.
So let's continue on then.
Yes, let's.
So what I forgot what I... Oh, the...
the Chinese.
Yeah. Tickle and Hisense. Were you impressed? I didn't know. See, if they're getting their panels from Korea, that doesn't impress.
I think they're primarily getting their panels from Korea. Certainly, they're getting their OLED panels from Korea.
Yeah.
And the Chinese were all over curved screens.
Yeah.
Higher was the other one. Chang Hong was another one.
Higher is Chinese?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's HAIER. They've been around a long time. I thought for some reason I thought they were Austrian or something.
And they all the Chinese companies are way up and coming. They have huge booths.
Yeah.
Haier, in fact, took over where Panasonic has been for years and years and years on the show floor.
God, last year they were a tiny little booth Haier was.
I know.
Showing
I know.
Kind of crappy radios. Wow. So right. Quantum dot, UHD. I'm trying to think of all the things we wanted to talk about. Oh, OLEDs. Did you see any OLEDs? Is that coming? Oh, sure. Are the prices coming down? Is that still around?
Prices are coming down. The only company that's talking about it big time is LG. And some of the Chinese companies were showing 65-inch, and they were all curved. And
is Samsung abandoning OLED?
Yeah, kind of. If anybody asked them when they were showing their SUHD, which uses quantum dots, it's an LCD using quantum dots, you know, and they said, well, what about OLED? And they said, let's talk about SUHD instead.
So it seems like everybody wants to make LCDs.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Panasonic had a 4K OLED prototype in their booth that they said was not going to be a product this year, but it looked fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked really good.
Yeah.
Of course, it was curved.
Which is
the only Japanese company with a curved set that I saw.
What is the point with the curved? What's going on?
You know, I don't think unless it's a gigantic screen, I still don't think it's important or even good.
Yeah.
Unless you're sitting right in the middle. If you're the one person sitting right in the middle, it's good. It's great.
Yeah.
But TV is typically not a solitary experience.
Right.
You know, you're watching with friends and stuff, and they're off to the side, and the curve makes the screen look weird.
Yeah. Yes. It's only a slight curve, or are they getting more curved?
No. Well, LG in particular is only a very slight curve, and that's good.
So I guess I'll stick with my Samsung OLED and get a I guess I'm going to have to get a SUHD at some point.
Well, they looked mighty good, and especially when playing content. Fox had regraded Life of Pi and Exodus, and they were showing it side by side with, you know, the Blu-ray of those.
Do you think one of the reasons to abandon OLED is because they can't do UHD very effectively or affordably?
No, not at all. All the OLEDs we saw at CES were UHD.
That's a little disappointing. I guess probably there'll be a video file segment that's OLED, and the rest will be LCD, right?
Yeah. Well, and LG, they didn't say pricing, but they did say, look how fast our pricing came down from our first 55-inch at $15,000, and now it's at $3,500.
Wow. Okay.
So they said our prices will be competitive. And part of that reason is they're using this white OLED with color filters approach rather than red, green, and blue OLEDs, which also means that the blue one won't wear out faster.
Right. That's good news. Although we haven't really seen an issue yet, but that was always a concern.
Right.
All right. Hang on. We're going to take a break. You want to stay for the top or you want to get out of there?
Unfortunately, I have to go check out my hotel.
Take off, my friend. See
ya. Thanks,
man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, you know, I think actually, in many ways, TV was the most interesting thing at CES. The Ultra HDs, the new spec for Ultra HD, the Ultra HD Blu-rays, these quantum dot LCDs. I wasn't able to ask Scott before the break, but during the break I asked him about OLED because that was kind of the up-and-coming technology. And he said, you know, it's pretty much just LG now. Everybody has abandoned plasma, which I think most agree was the, you know, best looking technology out there. They've kind of all decided to go all in on LCD, and they're working hard to make LCD look as good as plasma or OLED. And I think the quantum dots, the idea of quantum dots is to do that. They're just going to improve that technology. I guess it's because they can make LCD screens cheaper. They don't want to get, you know, follow this rabbit hole for other technologies. So we're just going to focus on LCDs. I am glad that the LG is going to continue to do OLEDs. The prices continue to drop. I have an OLED TV and I really like it. But I think we're all going to get Ultra HD screens in the next 3 or 4 years probably, right? All the content will move there. It's just like the transition to HD. Took a little while. I don't think it'll take this time it'll take as long. Things seem to be accelerating. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Home theater. Smartphones, computers, the internet, anything with a chip in it. We're talking high tech. Laxman from Fort Defiance, Arizona. You're next. Hi, Laxman.
Hi, Leo. You know, my ringtones with iPhone disappear after I went from iPhone 5 to iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah.
I used their ringtone designer app to make custom ringtones.
Yeah.
But imagine, you know, they disappear. And when I make a new one with the ringtone designer, they won't show up on iTunes. I think the ringtone designer has not made updated their app, it looks like.
Well, I would continue to use iTunes. Somebody sent me a very long email explaining how it's still doable, but the technique for doing it has changed a little bit in the newest iTunes. Was it iTunes 12? And do remember that there was a problem with iOS 8. It's interesting that you're seeing this with iOS 6. There was a problem with iOS 8 deleting ringtones, a problem they fixed with the current version of iOS 8, which is 8.1.2. Now, I'm not sure why you're seeing this with iOS 6, but it seems like Apple's maybe generally having trouble with ringtones. Remember, the phone companies would prefer that you buy the $1.99 ringtones. And that's ridiculous. You already own the song. You already bought the song. Why should you have to buy the ringtone, too? But it's a billion-dollar industry for them. And in some cases, companies like AT&T and Verizon, when they sell you a ringtone, only sell it to you for a few months. You got to pay again. I don't know how these guys get away with this business model. They're just horrible. I know why. Oh, there's no choice. That's why. There's choice, but it's kind of an imaginary choice between equally bad companies. This is why I think T-Mobile had a very good year. They added more than, 1.8 million new customers because people are just sick to death of Verizon and AT&T. Even Sprint did pretty well. Well, so the answer for you is it is still possible. In fact, I'll tell you what we'll do, because it's a multi-step thing. Let's make that our tip of the week, Josh, this week, is you still can use the current iTunes to make ringtones, but I don't want to go through it on the air because it's like 8 steps, and it's helpful to have screenshots. So we'll just put that on the website, techguylabs.com, and I'm gonna forward Josh the email I got from one of our listeners who said, oh, I figured it out. Because the old way that is, you find on the internet, if you search, the old way will do it. And I want to thank Mark Sissons, who sent it to me. He used the steps that were documented on Tech iSky, T-E-C-H-I-S-K-Y. Maybe it's techiski.com. But he had to change step 7. You see now... While I'm going to defer to putting this up on the website, I'll forward this right now to Josh. So when he does the show notes for the show today, he could put it up on the website. I'll send it to James as well. James, I'll send it to you and to Josh, and we'll. So Laxman, refer you to the Tech Guy Labs site, which will have this information. Maybe in the next 10-15 minutes, depends on how quickly they can get to it. You still can make ringtones on iTunes 12. Who knew? It's just the old method didn't work. Exactly. As for disappearing ringtones, well, I think the key is you should look in your backup. Ringtone files, M4R? Yeah, M4R, I think, is the format for ringtone. Look for M4R files, either in your iTunes or your backups, and you probably have them there. It's just I have to think that this is Apple's way of kind of bowing down to the phone companies. They still remember the phone company still kind of, it's a tense relationship. Apple has such clout in the marketplace. They were able to convince the record companies to kind of do something they didn't like at all with iTunes, selling music online, selling digital singles. Record companies hated that, but Apple has the clout, and they were able to convince them. Phone companies, you know that. When you get a phone from anybody but Apple, they load it up with their apps. They put their logo on it. You know, the AT&T Death Star on the back of the phone and all the Verizon junk they put on there. And Apple has miraculously managed to kind of leverage the strength of their brand to keep these phone companies from doing that to iPhones. But there are some littler things, I think, like these ringtones, where Apple might have made some concessions. All right, as long as you don't put, your Verizon junk on this phone, we'll kind of change how we do ringtones, so maybe people will buy more. Don't buy ringtones. Just don't. There's no reason. If you own the music, you own the music. Buying a ringtone for $1.99 something you already own is nuts. Just because it's, and the only difference, it's exactly the same. It's just shorter. It's 30 seconds instead of 2.5 minutes, and it has a different extension. It's not a different file type. It's still the same AAC file that iTunes makes for listening in the iTunes Music Store. It just has a new M4R extension. And then the iPhone goes, oh, that's not a song, there's a ringtone. And why they screw this up, I just have to think. The other choice is it's incompetence, and I don't want to think that. Tom in Warren, Ohio. Wow, it's regulars day today. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, Leo, how you doing? From chilly and frigid Warren, Ohio.
Did you get snow? Oh, boy, I saw a lot of snow
last night.
Ooh. Yikes.
Yeah, but we got about 6 inches of snow the other day. So I've been shoveling a little bit.
Oh, man.
It's very, very chilly.
Well, I
put my snow tires on today, so we're ready to rumble.
Winter is here, isn't it? What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I was reading on your good friend Molly Wood. You remember Molly?
She works for the New York Times now. And she's great. I'm so proud of her.
Yes.
Like I had anything to do with it.
It was a product that was in the New York Times, and it was called Bitdefender. Have you heard of that?
I have. And now they have a little box, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, the box that plugs into your router. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, have you had a chance to review that or look at that?
Well, they aren't. This is why I hate CES, because they announced this as CES, but of course, it's not out yet. So there's nothing to review yet. As soon as they offer this box, I will get one immediately. Bitdefender is a well-known antivirus company. They've been around for some time. The idea is they've put the antivirus in a appliance. We've seen this kind of appliance before, by the way. Let me tell you, and as Molly points out, the good and the bad. It's really not going to be any better than an antivirus. If it's an attack that Bitdefender, the software, doesn't know about, the box won't know either. But the advantage of the box is it sits between you and the internet. So you've got a router. You connect the box to the router, and it looks at all the traffic. It can prevent malware, your kids from downloading malware. The premise is good. It's $200. It won't be out. Well, they say it'll be out this month. I see it's not out yet. This is the problem with CES. You get your hopes up. You get all excited. And then they say, oh, and did I mention? $200 for the first year. Next year, you'll pay another $99 for the service. I don't recommend it at this point. I will look at it. We've seen a number of things like this. And, of course, in business, this is the way to do it. These are big iron anti-threat devices. We use them here. We use the Starro boxes here at the studio. That's a different matter. These things are pretty much more sophisticated. So not recommending it at this point. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. -12.9 degrees there, Fahrenheit. You know, again, I haven't tried it, but what it strikes me, and this is from reading both Molly's review and what the company is saying, is it's essentially firmware antivirus, and it's network wide protection. So $199. Yeah, I do recommend the OnePlus One. That was the phone of the year, Web 2024. So if you can get one, I would, because the price is great. But do understand that the support is weak, and so you're kind of saving on the price, but with the understanding that if you have a problem, you're going to be buying another one. But I love the OnePlus One. It's a great phone. And mine never – I never had problems with mine. I don't think Jason's ever had problems with it. The one I'm using now is the Nexus 6 because it's a pure lollipop, and I like that. Our show today brought to you by another company that showed a lot of interesting stuff at CES, SmartThings. SmartThings is really interesting home automation system. They started with a Kickstarter. That was a couple of years ago now, maybe, where they said, and I think this was absolutely true then, it's still true now, it's very hard to do home automation because everything speaks a different language. So they said, we're going to make a hub that talks to everybody. and allows you to control and monitor your home and all of your stuff through your smartphone, iOS, Android, or Windows phone. So you can set the rules, you can configure, and you can control. And it works with everything. It works with your Hue lights. It looks like a jawbone up. That's cool. The drop cam, the Nest, the Sonos. That's really nice. The Wemo. It's CNET's highest rated smart home system. SmartThings.com/twit. Now your lights, your locks. Yeah, they work with a Schlage, with a bunch of locks. Schlage, a lot of them. Your thermostats, your home security, all connected to a single app, which is unheard of. You don't need a different app for every device. They all work together through the SmartThings hub. You customize the way your smart devices talk to each other. So you could tap, for instance, good night on your phone. Lights dim or go off. Thermostat adjusts. Doors lock. That is nice. Set your lamps to brighten each morning at sunrise or when you wake up. You know what I love to do? I get my Hue lights to slowly wake me up by slowly getting brighter. It's like a sunrise in your bedroom. I love that. And, of course, you can keep your home protected with SmartThings and their home security kit, their motion detection kits, their water detection kits, and more. here's something some people are doing. Your Sonos system broadcasts barking dogs when you see motion outside the house. And if the motion doesn't go away, you can make the dogs bark louder. Set a camera to take a series of photos when unwanted motion or entry is detected. They've got great solution kits, security kits. The hub is included in all of them. That's the key. To help you get started setting up your smartphone and your smart home right now, SmartThings is offering Tech Guy listeners 10% off any home security kit or solution kit and free shipping in the U.S. SmartThings.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. Easiest way to do this. And by the way, big announcements at CES. Lots more to come. SmartThings. Get started now. SmartThings.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number for your questions, your comments, your suggestions, anything you want to talk about. If it's got a chip in it, we're talking about it. We're talking a lot about the International Consumer Electronics Show this episode because, of course, it was all week long. I did not go because if I went, you would know because I'd be talking like this and I'd be kind of tired. It's grueling. It's really grueling for the people who cover it, for the reporters. It's fun if you can go and not work. If you can just, because there's parties every night. In fact, one of the challenges with CES is which party to go to, because every night has three or four parties. They're really, CES is effectively, it begins on Tuesday, goes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it's effectively only four nights, although occasionally there's stuff Sunday and Monday night. And you got to pick. Who do you want to see? Which big major group? You want to see Tenacious D? You want to see Justin Timberlake? You got to pick. You got to choose. It's fine. You can always tell somebody who's been in Tech Reporter for too long because they just say, oh, yeah, I don't have to go this year. Thank goodness. Oh, thank goodness. Knock on wood. I'm so happy. Nevertheless, there is lots to talk about from CES, and we've been talking about it, and we'll continue to do so. Because I didn't go, but I sent people there in my stead. And you just heard Scott Wilkinson talking about some of the home theater stuff, some interesting stuff for home theater. More on robots and drones and wearables. There were even some neat PCs. Dell showed a very neat PC. In fact, this was kind of interesting because Intel, which also goes to the CES, announced its delayed Broadwell chips. Only the first round of chips for mobile computing, for laptops, were announced, the Broadwell U. But these are nice. They're not much faster. They're incrementally faster than Haswell, which was the fourth generation. These are the fifth generation, i3, i5, i7. But they're much better in power consumption because it's amazing. The manufacturing process down to 14 billionths of a meter. They call it 14 nanometers, down from 22 nanometers. They're pretty soon they're going to be zero. Then it'll be negative nanometer. I don't know how they're going to get any smaller. We're getting very close, I think, to the limits. Not the limits of our technology, because it seems like they're getting better and better at this. But to the physical limits, quantum, because we're at quantum scale now. And at some point, you can't, the electrons start acting funny. They're in two places at once, or they go from point A to point B without being anywhere in between. Weird things start happening. And there's, you know, you can only get so small before you get these quantum effects. So I think we may, I mean, we'll probably see some more, but not much more shrinkage. Smaller is good. Smaller means, of course, you can get more capacity in the same size chip, but that's not so much what they go for. What they're looking for is lower power consumption, lower heat dissipation, and that means better battery life. Cooler chips that last longer. So Dell was the first manufacturer to announce new products based on these new Intel Broadwell chips. 15-hour laptop, 15-hour battery life. Amazing stuff. I expect Apple, which normally Apple would come out at the same time as the new chips. Apple's just sitting there waiting. You know, we got the samples. We got it all designed. We're ready to go. Just release them, Intel. Just release them. But oddly enough, not. I do think if you're in the market for a laptop, particularly an Apple laptop this month, be worth waiting till you can get a fifth generation Intel processor. Okay, just that's what you keep in mind. Broadwell, because what you'll get is not necessarily a faster computer, and who needs faster nowadays, but you will get much better battery life. That's exciting. So wait for that fifth generation Intel. And as I said, Dell's already got them. I'm sure HP's just around the corner. Lenovo, all the traditional PC manufacturers will probably get to market quickly. But where's Apple in this? We'd love to see a new, there are rumors there will be a new Retina MacBook Air that'll be super thin, super light. And Apple's already got on their 13-inch, they've already got, I think, 11 hours battery life. So I'm thinking maybe they'll get to 20. Wouldn't that be interesting? Plug it in once a year and I would love to see that. 8888 Ask Leo. Glenn on the line from Glendale. They named it, he's so good they named the town after him. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well, welcome.
All right, well, you know, I heard you talk before about that spyware or hardware that gets on your computer, and they hold you for ransom. They give you a number to call. And
Crypto Locker, yeah.
Yeah, I think I got that this morning.
All right, now there's two kinds. There's one where it's just bogus, and it says, this is the FBI. We've detected child pornography or drug or something on your computer. But don't worry, because if you go down to 7-Eleven and get $300 in money packs, we're going to let you off the hook. Is that the one you got?
No, that's
the good one, because that one is not that. But then there's Crypto Locker and its variants, which say we've encrypted your data on this computer, and if you ever want to see your data again, you'll send us money. Is that what you got?
Yeah, they want you to call this phone number immediately, 24/7, because it just keep getting these pop-ups on there.
Oh yeah, I don't think you. I think that's something else. What? Read me the whole statement. What does it say?
It says your computer has adware / spyware virus.
Don't worry about it. That's bogus. You got the least annoying. So we had a call last week. I said, "What's the deal here? Where's this coming from?" He called the number, and they went through a bunch of silly stuff. He actually recorded it, put it on YouTube. That means nothing. In fact, it might even say it's from Microsoft. It's not. In most cases,
Windows firewall warning.
Yeah, that's what they say
on there. But
that's bogus.
I was ready because if they were going to, you know, hold a ransom for some and wanted me to send them some money, I was ready to just, because it's an old computer.
Blow the computer up. Yeah,
buy a new computer.
So here's the deal on this. This is it is malware. It's adware. Let's put it adware. You call it spyware. It's adware, which means they're trying to get you to call that number. If you were to call it, they would say, "Oh yeah, you have some really bad stuff on here. May I take control of your computer?" They may ask you for a credit card and say, "We're going to charge you, $300 for this service call." So then three things, if they do all three, that three things have happened. One, they have control of your computer, means they can put stuff on your computer, not take it off. if you give them a credit card, not only are they going to get the $300 initially, they're going to have your credit card number, which means since these guys are unscrupulous, yeah, you're going to have to cancel that card. Now, you haven't called the number, so you got nothing to fear.
Yeah.
The question is, what is this? How do I get rid of it? And that I can't say for sure. Here's what I would do. First thing to do is run the Microsoft Malicious Software Removal Tool. If you're running a modern version of Windows and you keep it up to date, you do Windows Update on a regular basis, then you can open a command line, click Start, Run. If you see a Run on your Start menu, click Run, and then type CMD and hit Return. That'll open an old, it looks like a DOS box, and in it, and we'll put this in the show notes because I know this is a lot to remember. Once you've got that black box with a prompt going blink, 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 you type MRT and hit return. That will run a program that doesn't have an icon on your menu. But Microsoft has put it there, and they keep it up to date. Every second Tuesday of the month, they update it. It's their malicious software removal tool, MRT. And once you run it, you'll get a window. It looks just like a normal. It's a program. And you want to do a thorough scan. Now, in many cases, this will get rid of what you've got. If it doesn't, and I'm very cautious about what I'm about to tell you next, there is a program. Now, listen carefully to everything I say before you act. Called Malwarebytes. The real Malwarebytes is a great program, but there are pretend Malwarebytes. So you must not go there. It's malware, MalwareBytes.org. That works very well, too. I know. I don't like to say malware bytes, but I've been worn down. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. So I don't generally, it's kind of a tricky thing talking about removing malware. You can't really. If it's really malware, you can't. You can get rid of whatever you see, but as soon as you have something bad on your computer, it's hard to know what else is there because not all malware announces itself. In fact, it's very likely that if somebody puts something on your system that says, hey, call us and we'll fix it, they may have put other stuff in your system that doesn't say anything but sits there and does bad stuff. And it's very hard to know. So the generally accepted advice by security experts is once you get an infection and you know you're infected, you can try to remove it, but that won't give you any peace of mind or shouldn't. The only thing that should is reinstalling Windows from a known good source. That is a Windows install disk or the recovery disks that came with your computer. Anything less, and there's always the risk that you still have something there. And it may not be a way to know. So you can run all the scanners in the world, we were talking about Bitdefender and the new Bitdefender box. It's the same problem. An antivirus, hardware, a malware removal can only remove what it knows about. And the problem is there are thousands of new attacks invented every single day. So if you got one of them, it's not going to know about it. There's no way to say with certainty, I don't have any. I am clean. Until you reinstall. So something that in this case, our last caller, he looked like he didn't even have malware. He had could have been a pop-up from his browser, for all we know. Could have been a browser hijack. These are kind of relatively easily uninstalled and benign infections that don't, in fact, require that your machine be fully compromised. And if that's the case, then running malware bytes, and again, be very careful where you get any security tool. Only get it from the original site, and you know that site to be good, like Microsoft.com/security essentials. That's on the order of that. But we do know malwarebytes.org. If you spell it properly, if you spell it wrong, you're dead. So you've got to be very careful. MalwareBytes.org, not .com. Because if you're a bad guy, think about it. What would be the best way to get your software in everybody's systems? Create something that says it's Malwarebytes, but isn't. So you got to make sure you're getting it from a good site. That's why I generally, unless you know what you're doing, it's very, very reluctant to recommend any cleaning procedure. And I'm even more reluctant to recommend you take it to the Geek Squad or one of these big commercial support systems, because they don't, they generally give poor advice. It's been my experience, unreliable. So get it from a known good source. In my experience, really, if you really are, you know, concerned and you don't want to be bit, and believe me, if you've ever had your identity stolen, it is the worst. If you've ever had a machine compromised, it's the worst. It's best to err on the side of caution and wipe that drive, format that drive, and reinstall Windows. Do back up your data, obviously. You don't have to throw out your stuff. Back up your data, format the drive, reinstall from a known good source. That's always the best. I know, it's malwarebytes.org, not .com. And it's got to be spelled just right. And all, you know, that's why I'm always nervous about recommending this. Joey San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joey.
Hey, hey, Leo, I'm your biggest fan, and I love everything you do.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, Leo, what do you know about internet over broadband? Using the power lines?
In your house or out there?
Out there.
Oh, don't get me started.
Well, here's the deal, Leo. Do you think it's I guess the only word I can think of right now is conspiracy between the cable companies?
No. No, here's what happened. And I know this pretty well because I was at the FCC during this process. I went down there, it must have been 10 years ago.
But, Leo, let me ask you this, Dan. Don't you think it'd be a good idea to make that technology work? Because I listen to your show all
look,
the time.
Look, I think the most important thing in the world is for internet to be high-speed internet to be widely available. This is not the technology, though. We do have the wires out there. What you're talking about is broadband over power lines.
Yes.
And broadband over power lines... The FCC thought we can protect emergency radio, but it doesn't work. It jams radio everywhere. And hams were up in arms over this. It wasn't Comcast. It wasn't Verizon. It was the AARL, the Amateur Radio League.
Okay.
Because what happens is as soon as you start putting broadband over power lines, you create transmitters in the power lines that knock out radio. And I remember going and talking to Michael Powell, who's the chairman of the FCC, and he gave me a demonstration in the FCC. Said, no, look, see, we can notch out these frequencies. We can protect emergency radio. But they did trials. And it was a horrific failure.
Okay, Leo, I got one other question I want to ask you while I got you on the phone. Leo, I want to run a PowerPoint presentation at my church, Leo, and I wanted to run continuously. And I was wondering if somebody in your chat room or you could recommend me. The way I'm doing it right now, Leo, is I use Microsoft Outlook, my PowerPoint 2013. And, Leo, it does work, but it'll stop at the end of the presentation.
Yeah.
I'm not running this over at my church. I don't have a computer.
No, what you want to do, PowerPoint will let you export it in a variety of formats. What you want to kind of do is export it as a video. And the video can then be played back on any computer that doesn't need to have PowerPoint. And all the video players will loop. So the thing is to make your presentation, export it as an AVI file, and then you can play it on anything as a loop. By the way, it's ARRL, Amateur Radio Relay League, not AARL, which I think is the Amateur Authors Redaction League, and it's a different thing entirely. The Amateur Radio Relay League. And boy, hams are up in arms over broadband over power line, BPL. It was it's sad because I agree with you. It does feel like a conspiracy. Like, well, this would work, and because everyone's on the grid, on the electrical grid, everybody could have internet. We've got to solve this, though. I agree, and I do. I feel like we're making steps. In fact, I'm kind of impressed. I did not think highly of the current chairman of the FCC. His name is Tom Wheeler, and I apologize, Mr. Wheeler. I have been laying into you. He's a former cable company and wireless industry lobbyist in the Hall of Fame for the cable industry and the cellular industry. That's how good he was as a lobbyist. And unaccountably, the president made him chairman of the FCC, which was kind of like putting the fox in charge of the hen house. And so I've been very skeptical about anything that Tom Wheeler has said or done. But you know what? He's starting to do the right thing. So maybe there is a redemption in the world. Maybe the guy has realized, hey, I got to fight for the public here. Just this week, he redefined broadband, and I think he did the right thing. you know, the definition of broadband is important for a number of reasons. We have a nationwide broadband plan that says everybody should have broadband. It had been defined as 4 megabits down, 1 megabit up. He's increased it to 25.5, which is right. That's right. I'll talk about the other thing he's done and or telegraphed this week that could be huge. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay tuned. That's a great link, 6272. We'll put that up for Joey on the website. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's Johnny Jet. That big old jet airliner has deposited Johnny in our laps. Our travel guru helping us get the most out of travel through technology. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing? I was just setting up my Epson printer, actually.
You have one, too?
I just got it.
Good choice. Did you get it because of the ads on the Tech Guy show or just because that looked good?
It looked good, but you know.
Now that you know it's an advertiser, I hope you'll buy more.
You know it.
No, I've been an Epson fan for a long time, actually. I'm a huge Epson printer fan. So let me ask you. You are home for the holidays?
I'm home. I was in Hawaii last week, and now I'm in L.A., and then tomorrow I'm going to be somewhere much colder.
That's pretty much everywhere in the United States.
It's true.
But
it's not in the United States.
Somewhere else, much colder. Are you going? You're going up to Antarctica. No.
Up or down?
Down. The Arctic is up. But see, it isn't. Okay, now let me just. I know you're a travel guru, but it's not really down. It's south, but it's not really down. It's just south. It's only down
south,
if you're
south,
looking.
South and down mean the same to me. But.
Yeah, I know, but that's a very Eurocentric point of view. You know, you could turn the globe upside down. It would still work. Then it would be up.
That's too deep for me.
Well, I think people forget that that's artificial. There isn't. It's not like the United States is always this way, and South America's below us, and you know, and to the left is Hawaii. No, it's a globe. It's floating in space. There's no up. Up is Pluto. Is up.
What about the equator?
The equator's in the middle, but it's neither up nor down. It's north or south, but not up nor down.
All right, I don't have time to discuss it.
Ask your next time you're on a flight, ask the pilot.
I will ask him. But speaking of flights.
Yes.
So last week, one of your readers or chat room members asked me to talk about SkipLagged, which I was meaning to talk about. So it's skiplagged.com. It's been all over the news lately. So it's this 22-year-old whiz kid from Brooklyn who came up. I mean, there's this hidden city trick that's been known for a long time.
You've talked about it. You say the airlines hate
times.
It. Yeah.
Yes. So this kid figured out an algorithm where you put in your city dates, city pairs, and he will find you the cheapest ticket to that destination, usually with a hidden city ticket. So real quick.
But look, he's under assault. United Airlines and Orbitz have sued him.
No, and he's already raised $64,000.
So, what is the grounds of the lawsuit? We'll talk about that later.
So a hidden city trick is, let's say I'm flying L.A. to Cleveland.
Yeah.
And the one-way ticket is $600.
Right.
And so then I start looking around for alternate airports like I used to. And I found Buffalo, which was 200 miles away, was for $200. And I'm sitting there, is it worth driving 200 miles for $400? But anyway, when I looked up that ticket, I realized that flight was stopping in Cleveland. It was the same exact flight that was $600 and then going on to Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
So what this kid has worked out was to find all those hidden city pairs.
So wait a minute. You get off the – so you – first of all, don't check luggage because your luggage will be going to Buffalo.
You do not check a bag.
You take a carry-on and then you just skip. When the plane lands in Cleveland, you say – hey, I got to go to the bathroom. You leave and you never come back. And now what happens though?
You're changing a plane. So,
oh, you have to anyway. So it's no.
The change of plane. So yeah, it's no big deal.
You just
deal.
Don't show up.
And, you know, again, you don't check a bag and you got to do
one
way.
Can the airline penalize you?
Of course. So this is where it gets tricky. It's not illegal, but it's against airline policy. So if you put your freaking flyer number in there like a bonehead, you're going to lose all your miles if they catch you. So you do not.
Whoa.
You do not put your miles in there.
They'll also, if you have a round trip ticket, they'll cancel the second leg, right? The return.
Exactly. So it has to be a one-way ticket. So listen, I buy dozens and dozens of tickets a year.
I almost
did it once.
Yeah.
Because I cherish my miles.
Yeah, and you want to come back.
Well,
especially if you're going to Buffalo.
A lot of times I buy one-way tickets. Because my schedule is always changing, you know, if you cancel the outgoing, it's automatically going to cancel the return. So it's just easier for me to do it that way.
Yeah.
But so I don't recommend it if you're a frequent flyer. But if you are traveling just once a year or whatever, and you find a really good deal, you should check out this site.
Does it work international? No, probably not, huh?
Not so much international. Sorry, that is not true. It will work international, but I put in. I just did LAX to Chicago, ORD.
All right. ORD. Okay. How do I get to I'm going to go from San Francisco if you don't mind. Okay. And then, so I see what you're saying.
Actually, no. Put in LAX.
LAX? Okay. That means I have to fly to LA to get this flight. All right.
Okay. So now see what it says?
Yeah.
You can go LAX to ORD and then ORD to Phoenix.
I see.
For $90. But
so
if you
Get the Phoenix flight for $90, but get off in Chicago.
Yeah, which makes no sense because it's an hour flight.
Why do they even do that?
Phoenix. Yeah. But usually those city pairs are not that far. Usually again, it's like what I said, Cleveland, Buffalo, or a lot of times it's L.A. to Dallas to Austin. So, and the reason why the airlines do it is to compete. So let's say Virgin America has a nonstop from L.A. to Austin. So they can offer a really good deal, but American doesn't. But American charges a lot of money for L.A. to Dallas because they get a lot of business travelers on that route. But if you put in L.A. to Austin via Dallas, they'll match the same price as Virgin America to stay competitive.
See, this is why I support Skiplagged, because they're helping normal humans.
Exactly.
The airlines are taking advantage of us.
Exactly.
With their computer technology, maximizing fares, and in the process, kind of taking advantage of us. So we're just fighting back.
Exactly. And then after deregulation, the airlines, you know, they've passed some kind of law that makes it, if you're going to fight the airlines, you got to do it in federal court, which costs a lot of money. So most people, when they get a letter from an airline's lawyer, they just close shop.
Yeah.
But they didn't realize this kid was going to get the backing of, you know, a crowd.
Almost. He's got 64,000. It's all GoFundMe. Search for Skip Lag on GoFundMe. 64,422. Now, I have to say, I don't think the airline should worry about this because, frankly, it's so complicated. I can't imagine more than a small fraction of the travelers do this.
True, but now, because they're suing them, it's gotten to the mainstream media, and now this guy's site is blowing up. He even has a warning saying, listen, I'm getting so much traffic that I can't even handle it.
You know, it's funny because somebody at our office, we've been talking about these kind of flights for several years. Somebody in my office said, hey, have you heard about skip lagging? And I said, what's that? And he explained. I said, oh, yeah, Johnny Jett and I talk about that all the time. But it's the Streisand. They call this the Streisand effect. Remember, because Barbara Streisand sued because somebody had flown over her house and had pictures of the house, and she sued. And then everybody went and looked at the pictures. If you just shut up, nobody will know about this. Now it's too late now. Cat's out of the bag.
And so that's why Orbitz jumped in, because actually he was trying to get affiliate deals through Orbitz. So he was sending – and because of Orbitz's contract with United, they were forced to sue. And now – it looks like he took Orbitz down, and he has Hipmunk and Kayak on there, so they might have to be forced to sue him.
No, they won't. Hipmunk's started by Alexis Ohanian, the guy at Reddit. He's cool. He's cool, man.
I know, but the problem is he'll lose his commissions on
the
United, so he might be forced to.
Peeved. Yeah. Big bad airlines. They're jamming us in. Hey, what about JetBlue? Did you see this? Because JetBlue, for a long time, they were using bigger planes, fewer seats, lots of room, great airline, and now first bag was free, and now they've announced, nah, the heck with it. We're going for the
well,
dollars.
They're still using the same two type of planes they fly.
Oh, we're out of time. I want to talk. Hang on, because I got to ask you about this.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More tech calls to come, too. I got to ask you about this, though. Hang on. Sorry, I don't mean to yell at you.
I'm not going anywhere.
Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. We kept Johnny Jett over for just a second more because I started the conversation foolishly as the clock was ticking away. But JetBlue, so JetBlue, I remember when they started, maybe 10, 15 years ago. Big deal, because they had leather seats.
15 years ago,
wow. They had leather seats. They had TVs in the back, all the seats. And at the time, that was unusual in the economy. And they had a lot of leg room.
And everything was blue. They served blue potato chips, blue everything.
I stopped flying JetBlue. But they've stayed still kind of the people's airline, haven't they?
They are. They're still a great airline, and now they introduce Mint class, by the way. So because you're in San Francisco and you go to New York, you can fly first class in a really good product, lay flat seat, for much cheaper than you could on any of the competitors. You can right now, I think it's $5.99 or $6.99 for a first class one-way ticket, which the other ones are sometimes $2,000.
But in order to pay for that.
They're going to add 15 more seats in coach.
Oh.
So, you know, their legroom's going to go from 35 inches to, I think, 34, which is still more than the other guys by an inch. But I was off the air, we were talking about Spirit has 28 or 29 inches of legroom, which is, you know.
I would be talking like this at the end of the flight.
You got to walk around. It could be a health hazard.
Yeah.
Most of their flights are short. So that's how they can get away with it.
Okay.
So, you know, and they're now checking. They're going to start checking for a bag. Before they used to give one check bag free.
What's your favorite domestic airline right now?
It all depends on the routing. I look at the nonstop flights. But lately, American is because they did not follow Delta. And United copies Delta, whatever they do.
Right.
But those guys have now Delta just started. Every mile you fly, you don't get a mile for every mile you fly. You get a mile for every dollar you spend. So let's say you're flying cross country, you'd get 2,500 miles. Now you're getting like 400 miles.
Oh.
And American has not done it yet. Everyone says it's because they haven't fully merged with U.S. Airways, and they will, but they haven't yet.
That's the problem. They will. They just haven't gotten around to it.
But
everybody watches everybody else, don't they?
Now I spend most of my money right now on American, and I'm hoping that other people will too. That way Delta and United, by chance, would reverse their policy.
And what is your favorite international airline? Do you have one?
Again, it all depends on the destination, but my top five are Air New Zealand, Emirates, Etihad, Singapore, Cathay. I like British Airways.
I'm not flying Etihad anymore. Did you see what happened? They kept it was a 28-hour flight. They kept the people on the tarmac for like 9 hours?
12 hours.
12 hours?
It was Abu Dhabi to San Francisco. So, yeah, they took a big hit, and that's what happened to JetBlue, by the way. That's where their downfall started. It was on Valentine's Day years ago, and they kept people on the tarmac for 13 hours. But now, luckily, in the U.S., they
can't
have a new law.
Yeah,
you can't
do it
more than three hours. Otherwise, they'll get fined $27,500 per passenger.
Good.
So
what's wrong with these people? These poor people, they're stuck on here for 12 hours. They changed the crew.
Oh, yeah, the crew's worked full 8 hours, so we're going to take them off. But you stay.
What? What
it's kind a problem.
Of crazy?
And that happened to me once in America, and I was flying L.A. to Vegas to L.A., and they said, we don't know how long we're going to be out here, but we have to come back and take one of the crew off because they were overtime. And they said, if anyone wants to get off, you can get off. And I said, I'm getting off.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to sit out there all night long.
Is there there should be a website that rates like this stuff?
There is Route Happy.
Route
and
Happy.
Hipmunk. Route Happy and Hipmunk.
Hipmunk does the agony thing, which I love.
Right.
But that's based more on how long and how many stops and stuff like that.
There's another site like TripAdvisor for airlines, and I'm spacing on it. But
we're
I think Route Happy. It might be Route Happy.
Next week, I want to hear
it. Okay, I'll look up.
His website is johnnyjet.com. It's a great place to go. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram. See where he's going next. He says he's going somewhere colder tomorrow.
Much colder.
I think you're going
degree temperature drop.
You're going to Cleveland, aren't you?
It's outside the U.S. I'm going.
All right.
Although that could be considered outside the U.S.
No, I love Cleveland.
I'm joking.
By the way, I love Buffalo too.
There.
Yeah, no, I joke. We joke. We jest. We're just humor mongers.
Went there so many times because of my old girlfriend. It's like, I'm not going back to Cleveland for a while.
Yeah. Johnny, it's great talking to you. Have a great day. Enjoy your little bit left at home. And then good luck on the road again. JohnnyJet.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And I think it's Glennis in San Diego, California. Hi, Glennis.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I have a quick question. I was in New Zealand recently, took my iPad with me. Well, bought it specifically to take. And
it's great for travel, so, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so easy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was able to get on, I was able to receive emails. But none of the emails that I sent either within New Zealand, to Australia, or back here to the States got to the people I sent them to, even though they were in my sent folder. And I don't want this to happen next time I go. So
I have a suspicion about what happened. So everybody's so paranoid about spam. Nobody wants to become the internet service provider that forwards spam on. So outbound email is sometimes blocked, especially if you are coming from somewhere that's not on. So, for instance, let's say your internet service provider. Who is your internet service provider?
It's Cox.
Cox. These guys do this, by the way. So Cox, they look at where you are, your internet address, and they say, well, wait a minute. She's not on the Cox network, so we're not going to forward her mail because she's probably some spammer trying to use our network.
Oh, and I called them when they came back. And they didn't have a clue.
Yeah, well, that's because whoever you talked to wasn't up on the details. So
what do I do when I go away next?
So next time, so what this is your outbound mail server. You have all mail systems have two servers, an inbound and an outbound. The inbound is sometimes POP, sometimes IMAP. The outbound is usually something called SMTP, Simple Mail Transport Protocol.
I would have no idea.
I know. I'm giving you way too much information. But this is the key, is to use an SMTP server that isn't Cox's.
Sorry. Can you say that again?
Use an outbound. Don't worry about that. Use an outbound mail server that's not Cox's because they'll block you. So, because you're not on their network. A lot of cable internet service providers do this. If you're not on their network, they go, well, you can't send email. So, for this purpose, create a Gmail account.
Oh, I've got one of those. Okay.
And in your email program, add another outbound mail server that's Gmail.
Oh, good.
And the way you authenticate that is not by your internet address, as Cox authenticates you, but by your password and login to Gmail. And so Gmail says, well, I can see that she's in New Zealand, but since she has logged into her account properly, she can't be a spammer, so we're going to let Glennis send her email.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Gmail is a good thing to have around for exactly that reason, among others. But
that's really simple.
Yeah. Well, and they should know that, and they should kind of tell you, yeah, we're kind of not great on sending out email if you're not at home. Yeah, we don't really work that well if you're not at home. So it's a good idea to have a Gmail outbound mail server. You can still use the Cox email. You can come collect your email from your Cox account. But when you're sending out email, just you and it, depending on what computer you're using, you could say, I prefer to send it from Gmail. There's a lot of different ways to handle that.
Okay. All right, Ben. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome, Glennis. Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Moving along to Mike in Birmingham, Alabama. Roll Tide. Yeah. Hey, Mike.
Hey, don't say that. I'm from South Carolina originally, and Roll Tide is the other night on the news. They got this little timer that comes up. It didn't reach a second before they mentioned Alabama.
Somebody sent me an Alabama sweatshirt, so I feel obligated to say that. But if you were to send me a Duke sweatshirt, for instance, I could say something else.
Citadel,
there you
whatever.
Go. Yeah,
I've been listening to you since, when did you start on the radio for Tech Talk?
Well, I became the official tech guy in 2004, but I've been doing this, believe it or not, since 1992.
Yeah, that's probably about the time I found you.
22 years now.
I've been listening to you forever.
It's amazing. I'm only 40. I don't know how that happened.
I understand. And my first programming thing in school was on a trash 80.
Yeah. We're getting old. What can I do for you, sir?
Okay, audio.
Audio.
I'm planning on building a home theater PC. Right now I'm using my regular home PC for it.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, when you got Pandora running, it's got a little volume control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I run it through.
Oh, you hear that? That's the magic sound that says we're out of time. But hang on, because we're going to do news at the top of the hour. Then we shall return. Hour number three of the Deck Guy Show coming up right after this. Sold American. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. Everybody's got something in the drawers there. Do you have a gadget drawer or gadget closet? Somewhere where, you know, you just... Look at this. You want to know if Leo, the tech guy, has a... Look at this. Just within reach. Let's see. There's a Galaxy Note 4. There's a Galaxy Note 2. There's an iPhone 4. There's some sort of Windows device. Within reach. That's as if I just reached back and said, oh, those $100 bills, who cares? Let's just stick them in a drawer. You can sell this stuff for actual dollars at gazelle.com. It's within reach. It's right there on your browser. Go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Don't reach for the old gadget and throw it in a drawer. Reach for gazelle.com. The place to trade in your old stuff so you can get some new stuff. And you'll get paid in cash. Payment is fast. Within a few days of your item being received, they pay the postage. And all the quotes you get at gazelle.com are good for 30 days. So you actually don't have – you can get a quote right now and then decide later if you really want to sell it. And that's actually a good idea because the price is not going up. This Galaxy Note 2, it's not worth more today than it was yesterday. Almost certainly worth less. Now, here's something else kind of cool. But look at this. 9 out of 10 Gazelle customers have had an excellent experience. 2+ million trade-ins. $200 million plus paid out to customers. That is a really, I mean, these guys are fabulous. You can get cash, you can get a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card, which they bump up 5%. If you forget to wipe your data, they'll wipe it for you. But here's something new from Gazelle. You can sell, but you can also buy. And if you've lost your phone or your kids broke their phone and you want to get a gently used new phone, Gazelle's certified pre-owned phones are great. They are great. Their devices are in two conditions. They're certified like new, which really is like just like new. Certified good, which maybe there's a little gentle signs of wear. But in both cases, you get a rigorous 30-point inspection, so they are fully functional. And they're backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So this is a great way to save on a replacement or a phone for, you know, a kid or just you don't want to spend a lot of money. You can go to Gazelle and get it. So to sell or to buy, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Hey, take a minute and find out what that old gadget in that drawer there is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it at 8888 Ask Leo. I'm surprised. Not a lot of cell phone conversation today. Usually we talk a lot about smartphones. Maybe everybody got their smartphone. Nothing more to say here. But if you have a question about smartphones, we can talk about that as well. 888-827-5536. We were on the line with Mike in Birmingham, and I'm sorry I had to cut you off. We ran out of time, but let's talk now. What can I do for you, Mike?
Well, you could use the cell phone also. What I'm trying to do is, when you got...
As I remember, you're building a home theater PC, and, yeah. And you're playing Pandora on there, and of course you can control the volume on the home theater PC.
I can control on the home theater PC, I can control volume on the Pandora itself.
Yeah.
And then on the audio amplifier, I can control volume.
That's right.
Now, I know if I overdrive by turning up one more than the other.
Let me tell you how you're supposed to do it. You're not doing it the right way. So there are, on most sound outputs, on a decent sound card, there's two outputs. There's the headphone output. And if it's a headphone output, then you could anything you do on the PC to turn it up or down will affect the headphone. Because the presumption is, well, a headphone doesn't have its own controls. So the amplification happens in the sound card. But what you want to use for a home theater PC if you're going to an amp is not headphone out, but line out. Line out is at a fixed nominal volume. It's the proper volume. And you could turn Pandora up and down. It won't affect it. You could turn your PC up and down. It won't affect it. It's always going to be the same level coming out of that line out because the card is not amplifying it. because the presumption is whatever's connected to the line out is an amp, and that's where you'll be turning it up or down. If you have a situation where you're going out of your computer to an amp, always use line out. Now, even better than line out would be digital out, because your amp probably has a digital to analog converter, or DAC. It probably has a better DAC than the cheapo sound system that's put into most PCs. You can upgrade, you know, if you've got a special super-duper sound card from, you know, what? I don't even know who makes them anymore. It used to be Sound Blasters, remember, or Turtle Beach. I don't know nowadays if there is anybody, because all motherboards have their own sound, and it's cheesy. Because that's, you know, so the better thing to do would have a USB connection and take digital out of your computer, or if you're lucky enough and your computer itself has digital out via an optical cable, take it optical out into the amp. Then the amp is getting bits, converting them to analog sound, amplifying it, and continuing on. That's going to give you absolutely the cleanest sound, the much better sound than anything that's going to happen in a computer. It's a noisy environment. There's all sorts of places noise can get into that sound, buzzes and hums and clicks and pops. Plus, it probably doesn't have a very high-quality digital-to-analog converter, which is funny because a good one doesn't cost that much, but we don't want to spend a penny more than we have to. So you'd be better off, frankly, I think. And there are lots of companies that make these. If you don't have and you probably don't, because if you had a digital out of your computer, you'd have a higher-end sound card to begin with. So take a USB converter, digital-to-analog audio converter, and do that. And FIO is a good one, F-I-I-O. They make some excellent low-cost ones. There are a ton of them. Almost anything you buy, even if it's $15, will be much, much better than the one you get in your computer. 8888 Ask Leo. Matthew in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. Has winter hit Toronto?
It's freezing up here, minus 20. We had a cold alert the other day.
Holy cow.
Warning.
Yeah, we were getting a kind of a balmy week last week, but all of a sudden, yikes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, stay warm. What can I do for you?
I have Wi-Fi problems, and more Wi-Fi problems.
You know, more Wi-Fi, more problems. I think that's a Jay-Z song. Maybe it's 50 Cent. I can't remember, but that's a very common thing. Anybody's got Wi-Fi, got problems. What problems do you have?
So I have a Asus X202E that won't automatically connect to my Wi-Fi when I turn it on.
Okay.
And there's a MacBook Air that sometimes is kind of glitchy on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And my router is not the best router you can get out there.
Sounds like the whole thing's a mess.
Yep.
So let me see. Let me think. I think we start with the router, don't we? Because it sounds like you have a bad router. So I doubt very much that the Asus does not have decent Wi-Fi capabilities. It should be able to grab it and keep it. Now, there are a lot of things that can affect Wi-Fi that may not be your router. For instance, do you see a lot of Wi-Fi signals when you look at what's going on out there?
Yeah, lots of them.
Yeah, there's a program. It's not free. There may be some good free programs. You're on a PC?
PC, iOS, Mac, whichever it is.
All right. There's some good free Mac programs, but the one on a PC is called Insider with two S's. It is a Wi-Fi analyzer program. And what it does is it looks and sees what channels are used. It's not merely how many signals there are, but what channels they use. It'll tell you, you'll be able to see quickly which is the better channel to use. A different channel might work better for you. Sometimes if it's a router's not doing a good job picking the channel, you might want to pick it manually for it. Are the things far apart? In other words, is your computer far away from the access point?
Well, it's a notebook, so I kind of move it around wherever.
Does it work better when it's nearer it?
So when it's like far away, it connects the same as it connects near. I had to actually install a range extender because the range on my router is really bad.
Right. That also impacts it. Of course, the greater the distance, the fewer the bars, the more likely your computer is not going to join or it'll join some other access point. If somebody in your neighborhood has an open access point and it's stronger, your computer's just going to say, well, this one's better over here. And you're going to say, bad computer. No, I don't want you to go on that one.
And I know that sometimes the MacBook Air connects to some air printers that are nearby. And
you should just print a thing that says, "I can see your printer from here. Turn on your firewall, you nitwit." So that means they're not using a router at all, probably. Boy, that's not good. So, yeah, it sounds like you're in a jam-packed area. You're in a city. The more signals, the worse it works. Wi-Fi is based on radio frequency. Radio frequency is a black box. It's a black art. It's voodoo. It's, you know, any radio station engineer will tell you, you see weird effects. You know, you turn the thing slightly, it's suddenly 100% better. You put it upstairs, downstairs. So you got a range extender. That helps. Maybe get a better router. That might help. Usually, you know, if you got a laptop, there's not much you can do. There are external Wi-Fi adapters, USB Wi-Fi adapters. I guess you could get that. I'm trying to keep from spending a lot of money on here. Sometimes it's such a noisy and bad environment that you just got to go wired. You might look at power line networking. That's actually works. We were talking about broadband over power lines, which is not a good idea, but power line networking now has come a long way. Works pretty well in the house. That's using your electrical system in the house to spread data. And that actually works surprisingly well. We have, as you might imagine here at the Tech Guy Labs, it's a mess. We have a lot of different Wi-Fi signals. Oh, it feels like it's an infinite number, but it's really only maybe 15. And we have all sorts of bandwidth shaping, and we do all sorts of weird things. Still trying to figure out who this FBI surveillance van is in our chat room. Our Wi-Fi access. I'm not sure what that's all about. It's just one of those things. Keep playing with it. There's no magic. It's all voodoo. And keep moving things around. But a power line networking might be the solution for you if it's really a messy environment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking, Heather and I, about movies. I just finally saw The Imitation Game, which is a movie about Alan Turing, who really, in many ways, is the father of modern computing. He kind of, in his mind, because the technology didn't exist, invented the modern computer and built a mechanical version during World War II in Great Britain at the famous Bletchley Park, which was the code-breaking arm of the British Army. They were tasked with solving this amazing encryption device the Germans had invented called the Enigma machine. They even had an Enigma machine. But the device was so cleverly designed that and they changed the code every day that you couldn't decrypt it even if you had a machine. You had to know what the settings were. And Turing, who was a genius mathematician, figured out a way to humans couldn't do it fast enough. But he made a machine that could. And it's an amazing story, and it's all true. Actually, the movie itself was based on a very good book about Alan Turing called, I think, The Enigma, that is a very complete biography of him. And I think it's accurate in all respects. I'll have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure it's accurate in all respects. And boy, is it a moving movie. It's an exciting movie if you're, you know, it's a historic movie and well done. And Benedict Cumberbatch, who may be better known as the voice of Smaug the Dragon, or Sherlock Holmes on the BBC, Sherlock Holmes, he's a wonderful actor, does a bang-up job of playing Alan Turing. It's highly recommended if you're a geek. The Imitation Game. David, Riverside, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, David.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I have an Epson Artisan 810 all-in-one printer, and I cannot figure out how to make it print in just black and white.
It is a color printer. I love the Artisan. It's an older printer. I had an Artisan for years.
Yeah, I love the printer.
Love it. And it's a color printer. It's a photo printer. It was my first Wi-Fi printer, which I loved. I didn't have to plug it into any computer. I just put it wherever I wanted it.
That's right.
And you're saying you can't print.
I have mine hooked up.
You can't print black text?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times when there's something in color and I really don't want to waste my...
Oh, I see color. What you're saying.
Yeah.
You want to print a color document, like, say, a web page, but you don't want the color. You want black and white.
Exactly. I don't want to waste my color, and I can't figure out a simple way to just change it to black and white.
It's Windows or Mac?
Windows.
Yeah. I don't know on Windows, but I'm pretty sure this is true on Windows as well. It's in the printer settings. So you'll get, when you print, you get a dialog, and there's lots of settings. You may not see all the settings. You may have to go to Advanced or Options. You may even have to go to Page Setup. But somewhere in the printer settings, there is print it in black and white. There's a monochrome setting. There certainly is on the Mac. In fact, it's a great idea to explore your printer settings. You may have capabilities you did not know about. There's lots of things you can do in the printer settings. And it depends on the operating system. You might have to go to Print Setup or Page Setup. Print Setup for Windows, Page Setup for Mac, to get to the more advanced settings. But look around. The settings are there. Somebody's saying if you go to Advanced Color Options, they call it grayscale. There's grayscale and there's black and white. There's monochrome. Somebody's saying, use black and white paper. Yeah, that's a good idea. Take the colored ink out. No, you can get it to print in black and white. And you do probably want to because it adds up. You can use up those color cartridges very fast. Karen in Sun City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Not so good.
Oh, no. What's the matter?
I've been having trouble. Somebody's been hacking me for, it'll be 2 years in April. I've bought new hard drives. I've bought new phones. I've done everything I know how to do. I'm not real good about the networking thing. I don't know how any of that works as far as somebody's on there. They take the files. They can do it right when I'm right in front of me. They'll disappear off the desktop.
Okay, first of all, my best guess is it's not the case that you're being hacked. There may be something else going on, but it's rare that you will have, unless you have incurred the wrath of a hacker.
I may have.
You've done something you think.
How would I know the difference?
Well, most people don't have the opportunity to incur the wrath of a hacker. That's a rare thing. So most hackers, you know, for somebody to do this over a 2 year period means they'd really have to have it out for you.
Yeah.
So unless you know you have an enemy. You seem like a nice person. Have you made enemies?
No, you know what? I am a nice person, but I do know of someone that I used to work with that. Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes ex boyfriends will do this. Sometimes coworkers who've got a thing for you might do it. Maybe your neighbor just doesn't like you. So let's talk about the symptoms and make sure that you really are being hacked. So, what has been going on?
Okay. Basically, it takes over my computer where I can't do anything on it. Like if I try to plug in a USB zip little drive, you know, it'll make it where those can't work. It'll block websites that would be able to help me. It blocks your website.
So what do you get when you try to go to Tech Guy Labs?
It went to it this morning, but that's something I hadn't tried for a while.
Okay.
But the one that I was at last night looking at, today when I went to it, it worked for a few minutes. Then when I looked back up, it was gone. And when I tried to turn it back on, it was just a bunch of jumbled stuff that I couldn't read.
It just sounds like your computer is a little bit messed up.
But I just wiped this hard drive night before last. Okay? I mean,
it sounds like you might be a sophisticated user. You know how to wipe a hard drive, reinstall Windows, all of that.
Yeah.
And you've done that.
I have done it so many times.
And we always say do that because unless you do that, you don't. If there is something on your system, you can't really be sure it's gone unless you fully erase the system and install it. And you're installing it from a Windows install disk or a system recovery disk, a known good source?
It's the one that came with the computer.
And it's a CD or a DVD?
It's a CD.
Yeah, well, that's a known good source. You can't modify a CD.
Yeah.
If it came from the computer manufacturer, sounds like you do have something on there.
Oh, it's awful. I'm serious. I have lost jobs over this. It's affected my phone, my whole life.
Well, I would get rid of the computer. Have you thought of that?
You know what? I've spent so much money on this. I really can't afford to get a new
computer. Yeah,
three computers down with this. Three computers.
Wait a minute. So this is you would get a new computer and then it would happen again?
Yeah, it's happened. I've got three computers in this room right now that, you know.
Does anybody have physical access to your stuff?
No, no one. No one whatsoever. I'm sure they're getting through to, somehow through my internet access. I'm guessing.
When you connect to the internet, you're going through a router, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, we've talked about this before, probably not enough. In fact, I'm going to do a little thing on it because it is possible to corrupt somebody's router and hack it. Instead of hacking the computers, if you hack the router, then the person get new computers, new hard drives, whatever they do, you're going to be able to get back into it. In fact, it turns out that you may remember on Christmas, the PlayStation Network and Xbox Network were brought down by the Lizard Squad. Turns out that's how they were doing it, with hacked routers. So you may have a hacked router. I would take a look at getting a new router. At least they're cheap. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That is interesting. She said she's reset the router. But a hacked router, the reason they can hack these routers is because there's a flaw in the router software. So even resetting the router, it could again be attacked. It takes, for this to actually happen, takes somebody who is dedicated to making your life a living hell. Now, that happens all the time, so I'm not going to poo-poo that. But you should look and see, is there somebody, you know, it sounds like she thought there was somebody. And if you had, for instance, a hacked router, that could be it. From Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I talked off the air with Karen for a little bit longer, and my suggestion, there's something missing in this world, is talented, capable computer experts who could come to your home and help you. And I think this is a business for somebody, but I suggested she call a local community college or university, call the computer department, say, I know this is weird, I just want somebody who's studying computer security to come out and just take a look at my stuff, because I feel like I have an intruder who's compromised my system, and strange stuff is happening. And do you think anybody would be willing to come out, and I'd pay you $50 or whatever? I think they'd come out just to see it. And I have to admit, at first, and I told Karen this off the air, I thought maybe you were mistaken, a little, you know, paranoid perhaps. But after she's described the situation, it may be there's something going on. It would be good to get somebody who really knows computer security. The only way to know, I can't do it from the radio. The only way to know would be to go. Have somebody who knows what they're doing come and look at your stuff. There will be, if that is happening, they'll know. They'll be able to tell. And if they're smart and good, and any kid at a computer college studying computer science probably could do this, they'll know what to do to lock it down. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go on to Joe. I love the name of this town. I'm going to try to say it. I have no idea how they say it in Maryland, but I would say Havre de Grace.
Well, you have to pretend that French were never invented and say and speak like the Beverly Hillbillies and say Havre de Grace.
Havre de Grace.
There you go.
Havre de Grace, Maryland. What's up?
You got it.
Hey, this is a state where they pronounce Baltimore Balmer. So,
well, the people who, yeah, I'm not from Maryland, but yeah, they do.
So Havre de Grace sounds right to me. What can I do for you, Joe?
Hey, I'm thinking about getting a monitor. I'm going to get a monitor for my MacBook Air, and I'm either 24 or 27 inch, but what about getting like a 29 inch smart TV?
Everybody asks me this.
I know.
Don't get a TV. A computer monitor is like 20 times better than a TV. TVs are made to broadcast television, and even though it's an HD TV, so it'd be 1920 by 1080, it isn't going to be as good. Well, and where you're going to really fall down is on text. It won't be very crisp.
Yeah, I did hook it up to one of the TVs I have, and the registration was all messed up, and I could have probably set it up differently, but I didn't like the look of it, and I didn't know if there was a hack that you could do to be able to do that.
It's really because television displays are not – television is not as demanding. Movies are not as demanding as your computer screen. It's higher resolution. You're reading text at a and you're only, remember, at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now, the good news is – a better screen is available for less money. If you go to Dell and look at their 27s, I mean, we're talking $300. So my suggestion would be not to get a 29-inch TV. If you want, spend $600, get two 27s. Your MacBook Air can drive that, believe it or not, and it will look much better. Now, the best monitors are expensive. They're from Apple.
Right.
And they're great. They're beautiful. But the Dell monitors are pretty darn good. In fact, there are a lot of companies that make pretty good monitors that are 27 inches and bigger. I know Dell. Maybe somebody in the chat room is going to say another brand. I've seen Samsung. I think I have a Samsung at home that I like a lot. I have an Asus, A-S-U-S, 4K display that's gorgeous. So there are I know it's tempting to say, well, let me get a TV. But a TV is going to have a – think about it. Even if it's the same price, a lot of that price is devoted to a tuner, to the HDMI. There's lots of extra circuitry in there. You just want a panel. In fact, more often my case, I want to say, how, where can I get a 15-inch monitor or a 55-inch monitor? My TV's too smart. It's doing things like, oh, you're not watching. It turns it off in the middle of a show. Oh, you can't be watching this. It just turns off. It's too smart. I want a computer monitor, 55-inch computer monitor for my TV. I just want a dumb screen. If I could take the brains out of my TV and just have one HDMI port, I would. Because, you know, I have one of them Samsung smart TVs. Too darn smart. It pops up like I'm watching a movie, and it'll pop up an announcement.
You know, the Samsung smart TV stuff's going to be off the air at midnight for 3 hours for maintenance.
I don't want to see that while I'm watching a movie. Go away. I want to take all the guts out, all the brains out, and just use a giant computer monitor for a TV. But you know that would be prohibitively expensive because monitors are better quality than TV. If I could just lobotomize my TV, I'd be happy. I'm watching a football game. This was really annoying. Yahoo Sports thing pops up, covering up the score and everything, saying, you know, how's your fantasy football team doing? I can get you the fantasy stats if you just press egg. I don't want it. I'm watching here. That's just annoying. Don't do that to me. And they have ads. Oh, that's another thing that's great on the smart TVs. You go into the smart section, there's ads. I paid a lot of money for this TV. I don't want to see ads on it. David in the chat room saying, you can turn that off. No, you can't. I know you can't because I've gone through every setting. You cannot. Maybe I could. The Samsung I have has an external brain. Maybe I could just take the, but then it has a proprietary plug to the TV. The TV itself has nothing but this fancy Samsung only big old plug that goes to the brain. The idea was, oh, well, you know, you could get a new brain that's smarter. I don't want a new brain. I want no brain. Sorry, Joe. I got a little overexcited there. 8888 Ask Leo, and I've scared all the callers away. Dora in Winnetka, California. Hi, Dora. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Been waiting a long time.
Yeah, you know, because Leo, this guy Leo, he can't shut up. He's a talker.
Okay.
They asked me, they said, can you do a radio show? I said, well, yeah. They said, are you a talker? I said, yeah. They said, good. That's like the one thing you have to be able to do on a radio show is talk.
Oh, and you do it well.
Thank you. But in the meanwhile, you're sitting there on hold for an hour. So I apologize.
Okay. I'm looking to buy a tablet, and I'm looking at the Kindle HDX 8.9.
I like it. Very nice.
That's it?
Well, what do you want to do?
Well, from what I read, it can be a portable computer. It's loaded with Microsoft, you know, Word, Excel, et cetera. I can download movies, which is what I want to do. I'm going to be visiting some relatives in New York who don't have Wi-Fi. So if I download movies to the tablet, then we can play them on their TV.
Yeah, the key on the Amazon tablets, they're very inexpensive, aren't they? And the reason is, and Jeff Bezos, the chairman of Amazon's, even said this, we don't have to make money on the tablet. We make money when you use it. The Amazon tablets are really designed to make it easy to watch movies from Amazon Prime and TV shows, to buy books with the Kindle. It's an Amazon device. It has a browser. It does have an app store. Amazon has its own app store with many of the same apps. It's Android, but it's kind of a... we call it skinned. It's an Android where Amazon has put its own stuff on top of it, so you wouldn't necessarily recognize it as Android. But many Android apps are available for it. So it for what it is and for the price it is, it's got a great screen. I think it's a good choice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then a question I have is I have an HDMI cable, where I can connect my, laptop to the TV. Now, what would I need to connect the tablet to the TV?
Some tablets, and I'm not sure about this Kindle Fire, but some tablets will allow you to do have a mini HDMI connector. I don't think, I'm almost positive, I'm almost certain this one does not. So you'll be using another technique. It's called Miracast or maybe something like it to broadcast to the TV, not cable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Samsung might, because it has USB to go. It has a funny USB cable that you can do other stuff. I don't know if you can do video out of it. Our show is brought to you by a great idea, BlueApron.com. You know the Blue Apron name comes from the little blue aprons worn by the apprentice chefs at Cordon Bleu, the French cooking schools. The head chef gets a nice white apron, but the learners are wearing blue aprons. And that's a perfect name for Blue Apron. Blue Apron is for people who love food, me, who love to cook, learn new recipes, learn new stuff, but just we're busy. We don't have time. Blue Apron's so awesome because they will deliver meals to you, not cooked. You just get all the ingredients, every ingredient you need to make an amazing meal. These are the meals this week. Pistachio-crusted catfish with clementine salad, Israeli couscous, and roasted fennel. Mexican-style rice and beef casserole roll with black beans and Monterey Jack cheese. Chicken mulligatawny soup. Cremini and porcini mushroom barley soup. Oh, my goodness. Soup time, isn't it? So the beauty of this is, for about $9.99 per person per meal, they'll send you a refrigerated box with exactly the right high-quality ingredients in exactly the right proportions. Plus, you get this great card in it. Let me see if I can find a picture of it. With the recipes on it and pictures and everything. There they are. And these are, by the way, coated stock, so they're suitable for saving. It's really going to, it's a great way to learn how to cook something. The ingredients come from local farms. You're getting produce that's in season at the peak of freshness. Delicious meals, 500 to 700 calories per serving. They're very healthful. A lot of fresh ingredients. Very, take you about half an hour to make. So if you're coming home, you're tired, you don't want to go shopping, this is perfect. Make an amazing meal. And you know what, guys, I just got to tell you, there's nothing more romantic than making an amazing dinner for two. You will blow her away. She'll go, wow. You provide the candles. Blue Apron does the rest. They'll work around your schedule, your dietary preferences. So you'll see what the menu is. You never get the same thing twice, by the way, which is really nice. Thai shrimp soup with jasmine rice. Look at that. That's a cremini mushroom, isn't it? Winter squash gratin with almonds, saffron, and cardamom. I don't even know what cardamom. I didn't know what cardamom was until Blue Apron, and now I love it. Meals each week based on your dietary preferences. All plans are commitment-free, so you don't feel like you're going to suddenly, wow, what am I going to do with all this food? Blue Apron's great, and if you go to blueapron.com/twit, you're going to get your first two meals free. So you can see what it's like. Fresh, delicious. I'm just getting hungry just thinking about it. We made so many great things from Blue Apron now. I love it. BlueApron.com/twit. If you've always wanted to be a great cook, it's easy if somebody does all the shopping for you. By the way, it makes a great gift, too. If you've got a college kid or, a young person, a young adult, and you're saying, I got to teach Henry. Henry's got to learn how to cook. Get him a subscription. The Blue Apron. You're going to love this. BlueApron.com/twit. Great meals right to your door. You add the cooking. You add the love. Two meals free waiting for you right now. Our very favorite performer is here, Mr. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's, I want to say, lousiest writer.
I'll take anything.
Maddest writer. Actually, he's a very good writer. He's also our gizwiz. Each week he comes, and he's a little under, and talks about gadgets, a little under the weather today, because you were at CES.
CES with, 160,000 of my closest gadget crazed friends.
And, you could have a policy that you Purell every 5 minutes and you only elbow bump and you'd still get it because it's in the air. You're all those people and you're exhausted to boot.
That is exactly right. Yeah. You know, I had my pedometer running. The longest day was Wednesday. I walked 9.5 miles. Just Wednesday.
That should be good for you, not bad for you.
It should be.
Yeah, Scott Wilkinson said he did 28 miles in 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he beat me in total. I think I just hit about 19 and a half.
But that you, now, when you go to CES, what are you looking for? What are you...
You know what? I'm looking for the stuff that everybody else is not looking for.
Thank you.
You know, they're up there looking at the giant TVs. I was amazed that LG was showing a 3D TV. I was thinking, what?
Why?
But I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And there was only two 3D TVs. The other company was, I think, Chang Hong, and it was showing a 3D TV without that you don't need glasses for.
Oh, and how was that? By the way, remember that was the big thing, glasses-free 3D, it's the greatest thing. Yes. And I kept saying, no, it's not going to work. And then it's died out, but these Chang Hong guys still do it.
It works well. The problem is to make it look 3D, everything at the screen is like flying at you. So after about 2 minutes, are so dizzy. They're twisting it and turning it and then throwing it back in your face. And you go,
it works. It's 3D. They don't some of the booths, they put feet on the floor where you have to stand if you want.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. That's funny.
Stand here. Don't move.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Then it'll be 3D.
Yeah.
So what did you like? Did you see anything cool?
First of all, IBM, Lenovo had something amazing because I knew the guy. And the guy said, Dick, don't run out. I want to show you this LaVie-Z notebook. So this is 1 pound lighter than the Mac Airbook. It's a 13.3-inch laptop. And they hooked up with NEC to come up with this magnesium lithium alloy case, and everybody they hand this notebook to thinks they're handing you like a portfolio or a folder or a mock-up, and it's an honest to goodness full Windows machine. So this is not coming out to May. It's toward the business person. I think it starts at $1,299, which is really not bad for what it is. But that was interesting. But more interesting to me was you get tiny little computers, and then they give you a big power brick to take with you. So there was a neat thing called the Zolt, Z-O-L-T, the Zolt Laptop Charger Plus. 3 inches long, a little more than 1 inch in diameter. It can power any laptop up to 70 watts. It has three USB ports on the side. One of them comes with a cable for your laptop with 9 different adapter points for it, and they said that'll cover 90% of all laptops on the market. While it's running your laptop and charging your laptop, the two other USB ports, one is for your tablet and one is to keep your smartphone charged.
And this thing only weighs 43 pounds. It's amazing.
3 ounces.
What?
Three ounces. Oh, yes.
You can't get 70 watts out of 3 ounces.
Well, go to GoZolt, GOZOLT.com.
Is it a fuel cell? Just a battery pack?
No. You know, the guy, I'm testing the guy saying, I'm running this laptop, I'm running this tablet, and I'm running this all through this single.
3 ounces?
3 ounces, not 3 pounds. I'm looking at it here. 3 inches long, 1 of the 3 inches in diameter, and just 3 ounces. I mean, I picked it up and held it. But wow. It's
And where can I get it?
I get it online. It's coming in 2 or 3 months. Okay. You see,
I am so skeptical.
Dubious. Okay.
I am so dubious.
$99.99, a pre-order $79.99.
$100, 3 ounces, and it can power a laptop, a couple of phones. For how long? Forever?
Well, you know, you're charging them. You're charging these three things as you're using this. So you're plugging this into the wall. This is your power brick.
Oh, I see.
Instead of carrying that.
Oh, it's plugged into the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a battery. I misunderstood. Now it makes sense. Sure, it's a light power brick.
Power brick, exactly.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
So instead of carrying a power brick,
no, I like this, and it works with a lot of different laptops.
Exactly.
But you know, the one it doesn't work with, I'm sure, is the Apple, because Apple you know, it's probably proprietary, the MagSafe adapter.
You know what? I think it said it ships with a $30 extra cord for Mac.
Oh, that would be worth it.
I think that's what the guy said.
All right. Goes, is it G-O-Z-U-L-T?
It's G-O, yes, Z-O-L-T. Gozilt.com.
Zolt, like Volt with a Z.
Zolt. Yeah, exactly. Volt with a Z.
All right. Now that I understand you're plugging into the wall, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
And the plug folds back in, and the plug can rotate 90 degrees if it's going to block something else. Yeah, there you go. Comes in three colors.
But they don't, see, I'm on the website. They don't show the cable coming out of it and going into the wall. That's why I'm a little confused.
No, because that's going to, yeah. Well, they don't want it to look like, there you go.
There we go. Now we see it. All right. Yeah. So it does plug in.
Yes.
Neat.
And the back of it lights up, so you know that outlet is in.
This actually goes directly into the wall unit.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty neat.
I want one of these.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're absolutely right. That is the best thing CES had.
One of many.
Anything else, or have we?
Well, mothers thought that pacify with an I was good because as your baby is using a pacifier, it's sending the baby's temperature to your smartphone.
That's kind of cool.
Moms were thinking that was good.
Yeah, pacify with a. There were a lot of robots, weren't there?
There were a ton of robots.
Did you have one that you thought was, you know, at all interesting? Or
I thought some of them were really gross and ugly. I thought the Meta, what was he called? Metabot.
Is a
robot hospitals use so that if kids are going in for different therapies, the robot interacts with them, but he's programmed to talk to the kid about what's going to happen.
Yeah, we talked about that on the GizWiz this week.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes, thank you for stopping by for
that was
episode
fun.
1500. Yeah. And I was so thankful you said, you know, Dick, on Saturday I have a radio show, because I thought you had fallen out of the business once you quit GizWiz.
You don't hear from me for a couple of years. You go, well, yeah, I guess he doesn't. Then, I guess he died.
No, and then I'm looking at this is like so professional.
Dick is here every week, believe it or not, at about this time to talk about great gadgets. And there's three right there. Three right there. The Metabot, the Zolt, and the other thing that you talked about that I already forgot about.
The Lenovo Lavizi.
The Lenovo. See, I think they're going to see. I think this is probably based on the new Intel chip. We were talking about this, the fifth generation Broadwell chips, which are going to be everywhere. Dell announced its new XPS 13 inch that's beautiful. So we're going to see super light, super thin, super good battery life.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Dickie D, thank you so much.
What's up?
Have a great one. The Giz Fizz will be a little later today because the iPad Today show is coming up on the Twit Network after the radio show. And then Dickie D and his Fizzy Gizzy. Do I have time for one more? I'm going to try to sneak in a call. It's going to be tight. Chuck and Tio. Hi. I'm not going to say Thousand Oaks because that would use up too much time. Welcome.
Hey, this is Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. Well, yeah, but you're in Thousand Oaks.
I am in Thousand Oaks, and I have a quick question for you as a long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'm a Time Warner subscriber, and my bill keeps creeping up and up, and I want to replace the router, and I don't know what kind of router to buy and how easy or difficult it will be to
But you do need to get a router that's compatible. Time Warner will have a list somewhere hidden on their website. Same with almost all cable companies now. They're raising the rental on the router, and it's almost always better to have your own cable modem. I use on my Xfinity stuff an Aris, A-R-R-I-S. I bet you that would work with Time Warner, but do check with them to make sure it's compatible. But you can almost always save money and get a more up-to-date, better cable modem if you do it yourself. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.